I'm going to come a little closer because I can't. Okay, I'd like to continue what we discussed with the Goyim. Now, just give a little background info. We gave a few shurim, two shurim already, on the Tkufa, on the time period of the Goyim. And we really showed, especially in last year, we went through a biographical account of what took place in the time of the Goyim, the power that they wielded. And we really saw, which was very, very unusual, and I think the only time we have that in our history, that, you know, while in Eretz Yisrael, up until this time, the Nasi, the power was concentrated by the Nasi, both the religious and the political and financial power. In Bavel, the Reish Galusa was really the, you know, the representative to the king. He had it in with the king. He knew how to talk to the king. We saw in detail how this was part of his family background. He's been doing this. He came from Yechaniah, was a direct descendant of the king of Yehuda. And therefore they knew how to talk to the royalty, and they knew, and they were the perfect askanim, shtadlanim, on behalf of the Jewish people. The Reish Galusa had his own army, and he was given the honor as a king, as a Jewish king would have been given. He had his royal guard, he had his palaces, he owned land. And whenever he would go anywhere, he'd have 20 people running in front of him. You know, it was like a whole ceremony, because he was like the Jewish king. Obviously, he levied taxes, and he had the royal Persian or Sasanian or Arab Khalif, whoever was in charge, he had his ear. So obviously, he was a powerful person. But then we saw, surprisingly, the two Rashi yeshivas, the Reish Masifta, one in Sura in the bottom, and Bublis in the north, I always thought that they were, okay, religious leaders, and that's it. But not quite. Yes, they officially were one level below the Reish Galusa, but we saw when even they made a new Reish Galusa, so it had to be at the presence of the two Rashi yeshivas. The two Reish Masifta came by this big ceremony, this induction ceremony of the new Reish Galusa, but they'd give the aliyah to the Reish Galusa, and unlike everybody else, he didn't have to actually go to the Torah to get aliyah, but they'd bring the Torah to him. But after he got aliyah, they wouldn't give the two Rashi yeshivas an aliyah, because that's already embarrassing. You're after the Reish Galusa, they won't get an aliyah at all. You know, if you don't get shlishi, you don't get anything. Why? Because they wanted to, yes, the Reish Masifta, maybe they were below the Reish Galusa in power, but they didn't want to make it that clear, and they wanted to show that no, the Reish Galusa are also in their own rights, and they're not really that subservient to the Reish Galusa, the two Rashi Masifta. Not only that, we saw last week that the Reish Masifta, and this is very unique, they weren't just Rashi Yeshivas, but each Reish Masifta from Sura in the south and Pumdis in the north had their own reshut, their own territory where they can appoint Dayanim, and the Dayanim would be paid by the local reshus, by the local area. They can levy taxes, you know, for that shugacha, for the butcher shop, and for the dinteris, and it was a set price, and the money would go to the Rosh Yeshiva. So the Reish Masifta wasn't just his little yeshiva, but he was in control of a whole third of the territory of Bavel, and they would pay their taxes towards him. With the result that the two Reish Masifta were somewhat, mostly, financially independent. We even saw that the yearly income that the Rashi yeshivas got from their territories, not just the yeshiva, was double the amount that the Reish Galusa got from his taxes. Now, it could be the Reish Galusa had his own wealth, and the Reish Galusa had, you know, generations of land, obviously. It could be the Reish Galusa's expenses were not paid the same way. Remember, the Rashi yeshiva, all the money that he collected went to pay for the Talmidim. Whenever a Shaila was sent in, and there were many Shailas sent in from the Gola, from the entire, what's it called, diaspora, it was always sent in with a check to answer my Shaila, give a check, and he would distribute it to the Talmidim. But it also gave him his independence of the Reish Galusa, and it gave him the power. And why is that important? Because we find something which we see by the Goyim, which is called takonas hagoinim. That the goinim would enact a takona, not like the Gemara, meaning something above the Gemara, a takona from the time of the goinim, and that was accepted throughout the land. And why was it accepted? Was it accepted because his Talmidim accepted it? More than that. Because if it came, and many times you see, a takona came from both Mesiftas, right? The power by both Mesiftas. Once both Mesiftas enacted a takona, that means their Dayonim would enact it in the entire territory, and that became the law of the land. So from a, their takonas were always in religious nature, but not only in Ebenezer, but in Chosh Mishpat as well. We'll read through two major takonas from time to Gainim, but it became law of the land because they had power over a large territory of Bavel, because they were in charge. So the Reish Masifta wasn't just a rabbinic figure, a Galadar, you know. We don't have anything akin to that. Maybe Vad Dalad Harotzos, which you had in Europe, also was similar to that, where they actually had power. The Chassam Sefer would say something, yeah, those that followed the Chassam Sefer listened to him. Those that did not, right? If Yashir says something, those that follow him, follow. Those that don't follow him. Right? Those that are not religious will not follow him. But the Takonas HaGoinim became law of the land. Why? Because the Goinim themselves had tremendous power to levy taxes. We saw last time that if they didn't like something, they had an ear with the Reish Galusot, they worked in Kohut, and they would send in the army and they would collect taxes from the king, and then money would go back to the Reish Galusot, to the Reish Masifta. So obviously, the Rosh Yeshiva wasn't just the Rosh Yeshiva, but he had power over the people as well to enact laws and to enact takonas throughout the land, and people didn't really have a choice, because if you're not going to follow, so then who's going to pass the Yidin Teres? You're dying, well, you had a fallout with the Reish Masifta, you wouldn't pass the Yidin Teres. You wouldn't write up a document for a loan, right? There are no secular courts. They won't give you a hashgacha in your butcher shop. You're out. So therefore, everybody had to pay a certain tax to the Reish Masifta, who had his people, his dayonim, throughout his reshus, throughout his territory. And it's quite fascinating, and that's where the power came from, the Reish Masifta. And we don't find that anywhere. We don't find Rashi had power. Yeah, he had power amongst his students. We don't find, but the goyim in Bavel had power. They had power together with the Reish Galusa. So that's, I think, quite fascinating. If you want to see two takonas which stand out, one takona which was done almost immediately, beginning of the time of the goyim. Again, the time of the goyim was year 589. That's when the goyim started, for about 450 years, till the year 1050. Right? The Arab conquest was right in the beginning of the goyim. 620, 630, the goyim started in the year 589. Almost in the beginning, look in Rav Shmuel Goyim number 1, he writes, V'acharav ma'arav rova shetiknu b'yomav lo says get la'alta le'isha. In other words, they made a takana in Rav Rava's time that a man has to give a get immediately to his wife. The lav kishmaitse the kal say the Rav Zvid. Unlike the Gemara in Ksuvus that says you don't have to. Uve yomav hoye besura, and his time in Surah was ma'arav hunoi goyim. In other words, in the time of Rav Hunoi Goyim in Surah, we'll see that's about 620, 630, that's when they instituted this takana. What is this takana? So the Gemara talks about, again, the Gemara, which was 200 years earlier, talks about Gufa number 1a, Hamaredes al Baila, Poiches al Miksuvos, Shiva Dunah Mishabas. If a woman is a Maredes, you know what Maredes means? I don't want to be with you, I'm not going to the mikveh, I'm doing my own thing, I want out. Maredes. So the Gemara says, "Pochsam miksuvos shiva dinam mishabbos." Every week you take away the ksuva, the amount of her ksuva. When you get divorced, you deserve $20,000. So every week that you continue in your rebellion, you lose part of your ksuva. Rabbi Yudaimer, shiva trepikin, how much you take off? Abaseinu chazru v'namnu, and the rabbis would institute this in time of the Amoraim in Babel before the Goyim. Shumachzino leo arba shavos yochazu shocham mebezin havidas shafik ksuvos meimon efsaret. Rather than taking off on a weekly basis, you have to announce 4 weeks in a row in the Shabbos, announce it, that this woman is a Meredes, make sure you retract. By the way, today, the term Meredes is very easily thrown around. She's a Meredes. She walked away from the marriage. She's a Meredes. In order to be halachically Meredes, You have to warn the person in advance. You have to tell the person, if you don't go back, has to be sent from Beis Din. Not everybody's a Meredes. A woman walks away from an abusive husband, she's not a Meredes. She left the house, she's a Meredes. You know, they very easily to throw around that term today. It doesn't go like that. So Gemara clearly says Meredes has to be warned from Beis Din. Fine. Says the Gemara, Kal Sei de Rav Zvid, the daughter-in-law of Rav Zvid, Imoda. She wanted out. Havit Fitzah Chachira. So she took one thing of her marriage, one silk cloth. Whatever she took, she has to give back. She has no rights to anything. She's a Meredes, she goes out completely. She loses out. Now, that's one halacha. That was in the time of the Gemara, that if somebody was a Meredes, if somebody says, I want out, then you lose everything. You have no financial rights. You have no right saying, a woman has no right saying, I want out of the marriage. No such thing. Go to Beis Din, you have to have a good taina. You can't just say, I want out of the marriage, I can't stand a man. Right, that's one halacha. There's another halacha that if a get is forced by goyim, that's not a good get. In other words, if the authorities force a get on a woman, on a man, that's called a get mu'usa. Get mu'usa b'yisrael kosher, v'ev dikhovim posel. In other words, if it's forced by goyim, that's called a forced get. Even though the goyim force you, the get is no good. V'ev dikhovim, and by a goy, if he forces you, they can beat him, they can tell him, do as the rabbis tell you to do. Then it's not called a forced get. By the way, it's a very interesting halacha. I was once in a case whereby a woman wanted to get a get, and the husband didn't want to give her a get. And they went to court, and we wanted, we paskened that halachically you can physically, not coerce with force, that's illegal, obviously, but physically, you can coerce the man to give a get, even if it's not done through the rabbis. How do you do that? Well, she was going to go to court. So if the judge was going to force him to give a get, it would not be called a forced get. Because the rabbi said that this man, you can force him to give a get. So even if the judge would say, listen, sir, if you don't give the Jewish get, then I'll throw you in jail. I'll take away your house. That would not be called a forced get, because Beis Din paskened that this man can be forced to give a get. It only works, however, if the judge says that I'm forcing you to give the get, because that's what the Jewish law says. If the judge says, I'm forcing you to give a get, because I tell you you have to give a get, that's no good. That's a forced get by goyim. So I remember I went in front of the judge, and I said, Your Honor, could you please tell this man he has to give a get, at behest of the rabbis? And the judge was a real stinker, and the judge said, I will not do that. That goes against the establishment clause, separation of church and state, and I will not say that this man must give a get because the rabbis say he must give a get because I say he must give a get. Terrible. Didn't help anything. The woman there never got a get. She got remarried without a get. There was a kid born, and mom said, don't ask. And years later, 10 years later, he gave a get. It was a bad case. But that's the concept. If a get is forced by goyim, it doesn't work. So what happened was that in the time of, right in the beginning of the goyim, they made a new takana, a new thing. The goyim were very progressive. And they said, even though halachically, if a woman says, I want out, you can't do anything, or she loses everything, you can't force the husband to give him a get. In the time of the goyim, for those 400 years, they made a new takana. Look at number C. This is a tshuva from the goyim. Isha she yoyshev tachas baila, a woman that's married, ba'amula, and she tells him, Gershani, divorce me. Einei reitze leishavimach, I don't want to be with you anymore. I'm demanding a divorce, a get. Chayev liten laklum iksuvas eloi, goyim dohavim meredes eloi. In other words, do you have to give her a ksuva? Is she a meredes? Is she rebellious or not? Is she entitled to say that? Yes or no? Say the goyim, kacho inu, Sheshua sadin hoisim mikora. Technically speaking, ein mechayven es abal legarashes ishtoi im biksho gerushin. We don't force the husband to give a get if she wants a get. Too bad. Chutz ma'isus rabbanu sein ubayim shekoyfen as loitzin. In other words, really mikora din viskinu shemashen oisok shetavas gerushin shnei mizchoy shem mitzvaisu. You have to make her wait at least a year. We don't force a get. Says the goyim right by the arrow. V'achei rabbanu sevaroi. In the beginning of the time, the goyim after the rabbanu sevaroi, kesherou chachomim shebnois Yisrael holchois v'nisleis bagoyim Nitalehem Gitin Ba'inis Mi Ba'aleim, that what would happen was, in the time of the Gaonic period, the women, they would come to the husbands and say, we want a get. And the husband says, I'm not giving you a get. So they would go to the authorities and say, force this man to give me a get. And the authorities would say, women's rights. Why? If you remember, we spoke about in the beginning, at the end of the Sasanic period, there was a new movement, the Mazdak, a form of Zoroastrianism, where everybody did whatever they wanted, and it was freedom for everybody, bordering on the, you know, on immorality, everybody, land is shared, all marriages are shared.
Right before the Arab conquest.
It was a little hefkeris in the time of the Babylonian period, right before the Arab conquest. You can look it up, historically speaking. It was called Mazdak the Elder. It was a new type of religion. But it affected the Jewish people as well, that the woman says, I want out. They said, you have a right to be out. Nobody has to be held captive. So what would they do? They would go to the authorities, and they would force the men to give a get. Force the men to give a get, that's a get musa. No good. So what did the Goyim do? They made a new takana. We agree to it, halachically, that from now on, anytime a woman wants out, immediately, takana sa Goyim, the man's got to give a get. No questions asked. She might not get a full ksuba, but she has a right to a get.
What happened?
They stopped it. But the Rambam, look what Rambam quotes on. I have the Rambam here. The Rambam says today, we're mevatel that takon of the Goyim, but in those that want to still rely on the Goyim, it's not the end of the world. Why? Because the Goyim did like that 300 years ago.
How did Rambam
have the power
to do that?
The Goyim only did it for those years. I think the Goyim themselves were mevatel it. But they only instituted for those 300 years. So that's a major thing, right? They can
all
the agunas problems itself. Look what he says over here. So v'yesh kes gittin b'anis topic get mus b'nei olosh l'vdin v'kalim mechuber takinu underlined b'mei mar baravuna bar mar hunoi neichem eden, which is what the Shvir Gaon says, in a time of mar rabba bar hunoi l'meredes v'tevas kirshin shekol nechse tembar zol shechlis lo mishalem mishalot tishalem yisham lo tachtav. Okay, the financials are arranged a certain way. The kaifin I say, and you force him, the kaisev lo get la alter. And he has to give her a get immediately. Says Rav Shira Gaon writes, uvezois anu misnagim hayayim. And we're doing this like this, kishloish mois shana v'yaisa. More than 300 years. Rav Shira Gaon was when? In the year 900, 920? And he says, we're doing it already more than 300 years. That means this was done right in the beginning of the Gaonic period. Why? Because that was right at the end of the Sasanic period, when it was as Efkeris, and that's what these people were doing. So the Gaonim said, we're going to make a new takana. You have to give a get immediately. Afatem asukein adheno. So you can also do that. You can rely on these great Gaonim from 300 years, and that's where you can do it. This takana fell apart. It stopped. It wouldn't be bad to try and reinstitute it. We don't do that. But that was...
They didn't do that.
They didn't do that. Then the Rishonim came along already and they stopped it and it was ready to get Musa and they didn't like it and that was that. But you see the Goyim, they enacted takanas against the Gemara. Right? It's against the Gemara, says you can't do that. Gemara says only certain types you can force. Man is a Baal Polipus, he's missing two hands and two feet and he has stinking from his mouth. Nobody can live with a man like that. Maybe you can force him to give a get. Somebody is homosexual, you can force him to give a get. Things like that. Somebody who is living in sin, you can force him to give a get. A kohen with a grusha, you can force him to give a get. A woman who wants out, you can't force him to give a get. A get has to be done willingly. Come along the goyim, no, we make a new takana. You can force giving a get. That's one big thing, all the way at the beginning of the goyim time period. They made a takana which was accepted throughout the land. Another takana, which I think is something else the goyim did, which again, doesn't go with the Gemara, but that we still have adayim azeh. The last takana towards the end of the Gaonic period. Look at number 2. The kosev hanagid b'tshuva yisov lemar Rav Shalom v'Rav Nutrinoi d'min tamnin v'taltin shnin d'shoni. I guess what is tamnin v'taltin? 82 years. D'shoni reish galusa, that the reish galusa, I guess, learned, or the reish galusa had this, or the 82 years of the reish galusa v'taltei mesifta. And the two academies, Sura and Pumbedisa, the Dayona de Bava, and the Dayonim, we said the special Dayonim, the Av Bezdins, the Reishe Kalo. What are the Reishe Kale? Avenue went there for that part. They sat in 10 rows in front of the Rosh Yeshiva. Every row had seven people. It was all hierarchy, who was in the front row, the second row. Reish Kala means the head of the rows. So they had 10 heads of rows. The 10 of the you say that, you kumpuka mishmaya, Dayone divava, l'reish kale, l'reish misivasa, l'reish galvasa, that's reish galusa, reish kale, reish misifta. Those are the ones we talk about. L'reish kale, nagi, they made a takana, l'migmei balei choivin, to be able to collect for people that have IOUs, uksuva, umezoinis, ksuva money, or you know, money support for the children. If you have an IOU, even you owe somebody money, you can collect min ha-metaltalin, even from metaltalin. What? Even from what? Movable properties, which is not in your rishus, right? In other words, which is not by you. You can collect from only by you, obviously. Sold it. But movable properties, which is by you. Even though mina gemara, you can only collect from karka, b'chasri b'chol asvrasa d'Yisrael, and we made this takana throughout the entire land of Israel, b'gushpanka, with the seal, the reish galusa of the reish galusa, uva'abe chumre the rashvasa. I know what that means. With the four types of rishuyos, b'chol dainin de leimag b'metaltlin. And whoever, with any dayan that's not going to collect from movable goods, we're going to put him in cherum. In other words, they made a new takana that even though according to halacha you can only collect from land, towards the end of the gaonic period, they made a new takana that from now on you can collect IOUs, you can collect ksuva mezainus, also from movable goods. Even from the Yarshim, I think that's a Chiddush. Even from the Yarshim, even after the man dies, you can collect from his movable goods. Why do you think they made that takana?
Is this because of Europe or here?
What?
Is this because of Europe or is this because of Bubba?
I think it's a combination of the two. So I think the reason is, because in the beginning of the Gemara's time, Jewish people was an agricultural, Bubba was an agricultural society. Everybody owned land. As you went into the Gaonic period, 800s, 900s, Jews spread out, right? We're going to see that. Jews spread out throughout Spain, right? The Jews didn't come to Spain in the year 1100, time to riff. No, Jews were in Spain already in the year 700, 800, Jews were living in Spain. The Arab lands, Jews were living over there. Probably even Western Europe, they were living as well. Matter of fact, after the time of the Gaonim, and that's why they had all these concepts of Tshuvas HaGaonim. We never had that. The first ones to write responsa were the Gaonim. Why did they write responsa? Because up until that time period, the Jews were local. They were either in, at least the Torah was local, either in Eretz Yisrael or in Bavel. You went to the academy, and that's where you learned. But then Jews started moving out and spreading out. And maybe the agriculture wasn't so much a trade anymore. Jews started trading. When you start trading, you don't have to be living next to your land. You can live far away, you can travel, you can, right, they probably had ships, the Arabs was one big Arab conquest, so they owned that entire area, so they had trade throughout the land, Jews became money lenders, Jews became traders, but merchants, they didn't have any more exclusive lands. Therefore,
in Europe they weren't able to own land,
exactly, and this was all part of the jurisdiction of the Gaonim. So the Gaonim say, the Gemara is outdated. Can only collect from land, that doesn't apply today anymore. We can't do that. So again, they made a takana that from now on you can collect for movable goods. How was it enforced? Why would somebody listen to it? Well, what do you mean? The Gaonim had the power. They had the Dayanim. Any Dayan that's appointed by the Gaonim was like a self-perpetuating system. The Dayanim were appointed by the Gaonim from Bavel. So any Dayan that didn't follow that, boom, he threw them out. So they were able to enact such takanas. And it became the law of the land. This is not Ebenezer. This is not marriage issues. This is Chesh Mishpat. This is how a Jew collects his money. The Jew is not going to go to the Arab court, right? He's not going to go to the Christian court. He's not going to go to court with a bunch of bishops. Who is he going to go to? There was no such thing as a secular court. He's going to go to the Arab court? No. He's going to go to the bishops or the Christians? Also not. He's going to go to the Jewish court. The Jewish court makes these laws. He follows it. And that becomes the law of the land. So the Gaonim, though they cannot change the Gemara, and they don't change the Gemara, but they can adapt the Gemara to the time periods. And if Chazal say, yo, and they have reasons why they do that, and they write tshuvas, why they can do that. But the Gemara says, A, we can say, yeah, but that doesn't really apply to us today, so therefore, and the way it works, obviously, is when a person makes a ksuva, in the olden days, he only had das on the land. Today, when everybody has money, so even though it's not balaylam, his das is on the money as well, and therefore it works. That's the way it works halachically. But they were quite proactive and quite progressive. They made all these takonas agayim.
What made them see what they can pick and choose? Based on the times?
No, but it had to fit. How did the Moshe Feinstein decide come with new things, right? Based on the Gemara,
I always use this example. Nobody used to take on Shabbos. You don't take medicine because of the same grinding. Nobody grinds; hasn't grinded in 100 years.
Correct.
Yeah, we can't.
You can't go against Gzeira.
Exactly.
So again,
they do that.
They didn't go against Gemaras with Gzeiras and things like that. What they did go against, in other words, Gemara says Gzeira, you can't do this on Shabbos. They didn't say, well, it doesn't apply anymore. Clearly not. But especially in civil law, in Chosh Mishmet, there's such a concept that, you know, if that's the way it's done today, then that becomes, there's a halachic clause that becomes part of the Minhag HaMedina, and hence, that's your das. Chosh Mishmet is all on what my intent was at the time of the sale. Right? Even today we have that, by the way. The place can bring down today, what's the name? A will. A non-Jewish, non-halachic will. Does that have effect or not? So we gave a bunch of shurim about it, and we said it doesn't really have effect. It doesn't really work. And with Padova from Stamford Hill, from Golders Green, Chassidisha, he says, no, he has a whole tshuva that even a civil will, a non-secular will, has effect today, based on the Gemara, that's what a person's das is. So you can adapt in those things. So the takanas that they made was only in these things. The takana of the forcing get is somewhat of a chiddush, that I agree. That's clearly chiddush, because that's talking about, you know, Ebenezer. And that's not just, you know, so that's, they were able to do that. That you force the husband to give a get. I guess the reason also,
Harasha,
and also maybe, because the Gemara says that if it's done based on Yisrael, then it's not a get musa. So if we can say that, you know, so therefore, the Gemara gives leeway. Listen, you find everything, if you want, you can find the right Gemara to support that. You write a tshuva, and those that follow. These were the Goinim that did it, and hence people followed. So that was, I think, we see power of the Goinim because of their jurisdiction that they had throughout the land. They were able to enact takanas. Okay, now three things I want to discuss about the tshuvas. A new phenomenon are tshuvas Goinim. We don't find it anywhere in the time of the Gemara. They discussed in the Gemara. It was written out in the Gemara. Tshuvas HaGoyim was a new phenomenon where people would send questions and they would answer the questions. They would send a question by mail, by courier, by post, and they would answer the questions, and that became the beginning of the responsa. Right? Now, the reason for that is simple, because in other words, in the olden days, I suppose, everything was land-based. So, you learned in yeshiva, in the Masifta, that's in Eretz Yisrael, and then you had to make your panasa, so you stayed in your land, you came back, but you're always nearby because you're always near your land. Once the trade is not necessarily your panasa, the way they made a living wasn't necessarily through agriculture, then you can live anywhere. And many of these goyim, their talmidim, in the beginning they learned by them, and they spread out. And they went part of the Arab lands, which was huge, went all the way to Spain, and they settled over there. And they weren't held to agriculture, so they can live far away. But they had a question. Question something that they learned. A question something what to do in a certain situation. So what are you going to do? You're not living anymore next to your Rebbe. So they send a shaila. They send the question. And the goyim respond with a tshuva, with an answer. Now we saw last time the way it was done is that the goyim usually discussed it with the other members of the yeshiva. And they gave their answer and then he gave his answer. And then they formulated it and he wrote his name to it. But that was the concept of tshuvas HaGoyim. I think we have thousands, actually, of tshuvas HaGoyim on all facets of life. And it's fascinating if you want to see a little bit on the, you know, on the development of the tshuvas. Just to give you an example. So, number three I first put in, the need for tshuvas. So, let's just read it together. Min Masil, that's his person's name, Lishmuel ben Chofni Zal. And then he says something, Tam Kalach Idach Allah. I don't know what that means, but it must be something in Arabic. Okay, So maybe it means something, I know, may God protect him or something like that. You know, it's like throwing an English word in the tshuva. To the great Shmuel ben Chafni de Goin, you know, may God bless him. It's throwing an English word. So then the question is, in other words, the Ismailites, the lords of the land, they don't come to Mitzrayim only once a year. And the Jews don't go alone with them. In other words, they go themselves. But they are the couriers. Could you send a get along with an Arab to be a shliach? Right? You want to give a get to your wife? The wife is somewhere else. Could you send a get along with the Arab that he should carry the get and he'll be the shliach? Well, he can't be the shliach to give over the get, but could he be the shliach to carry the get from point A to point B without doing anything? Meaning, I'm appointing Mati to be the shliach to give the get to my wife, and I need to get it to Mati. Could I send it with the Arab courier? Because Mati is over here, and his wife or my wife is somewhere else, and I need to send it from point A to point B. And there's no Jews coming along, just Arabs going back and forth. Could we send a get with an Arab? That's the question.
Not to the wife.
Not to the wife, but to somebody else over there. To another shliach. Okay. By the way, we have that today as well. Could you send a get with FedEx? If not, the Greenblatt writes a get in point number one, and the wife is in New York, and not the Greenblatt is doing a get somewhere in Washington State. He's going, I'm going to wait till he sends it to me, till he comes to me personally to New York. Could he send it with an Arab? Could he send it by mail? That question was asked to the Goyim. Because in time of the Goyim, again, Jews were living all over the place, and they didn't have Jews going from place to place all the time. It wasn't like Gemara says, Bovel to Eretz Yisrael, Shayorois Metsuyos. What does it mean, Shayorois Metsuyos? You had Jews going back and forth all the time. Caravans of Jews going back and forth. The two main centers, Eretz Yisrael, Bovel. Jews going back and forth. In the time of the Goyim, you had Jews living throughout Arab lands. You didn't have Jews going all the time. You had Arabs going all the time. Could you send a get along with an Arab? That's the question. And you tell one of the Arabs, in other words, and then you'll tell this Arab, send it, give it to that Jewish person, and I'll write along a letter signed by three dayanim that, by the way, the other person, the Jewish person, you made a shliach by the first bezdin. Does it work or not? So he brings down uchuvas dovazer masha shnina that we say hakok shem lovi seget chutz mecheshet v'katan v'suma v'nochi that a guy cannot be a shliach. Kibul katan migil chesh and zavah shodin zavah and zavah is a guy apostle. V'man otam v'nochi loy batayru. So the Gemara is going to say the end, or the answer is going to give that even though a guy cannot be a shliach, but here he's not a shliach. Here he's just a maisa koif ba'alma. The Gemara says the poskim say the goyim say he's just like a monkey. A transporter, he's the FedEx. He's not doing anything. And based on this Tshuva Sagoinim, till today, we will send the get with FedEx because he's not a shliach. He's just panning it over from one shliach to another shliach. It's just a mailman. It could be a monkey, it could be a mailman. It's meaningless. But this question originated in the Tshuva Sagoinim because of the time period and because of the distances that they found themselves in. So that's, you know, that shows you that people were traveling. People living far away, and they would send questions, you know, questions via post. Send gittin via post. They had to communicate with the goyim who lived far away. Now, something else which I found fascinating is that it seems to be, I would think, that the original shilas and tshuvas towards the goyim grew more out of a need because the talmidim of the goyim lived far away, and they wanted clarification. Meaning these were Talmidim that learned by the Goyim, and now they moved out, and they wanted clarification. You see, in the early Yeshuvas of the Goyim, he says, for example, number four, Sa'a Shalom, I know what the next word is, Goy Shechnis Yodah B'Sechyeno Shel Yisrael, if a Goy puts his hand in the Jewish person's wine, Kulam Subachas Ubuzum Afilas B'Yisrael, fine. In other words, Yayin Nesach, V'mo Yerotzen V'Yisem, he tells him, if there was will, v'yisem lefoneinu, and you would be in front of us, the Goyin writes to his Talmud, ha'yaf shalafashan, yafa yafa, I would have been able to explain you very well, ulevaren yafa yafa, zumizu, kamoiz dava dibu aleifnov. In other words, if you'd be sitting in front of me, I'll be able to explain you the sugya so much better, says the Gaon. Because when the student sits in front of his master, when you're sitting in front of me, I can see what are you missing, what are you not getting, what are you not understanding. What's bothering you, what's not. And I can answer you. But written, how much could I explain you already? And it makes us tzivinu, because I'm close Yain Nesach. Therefore, let me give you the general rules of thumb about Yain Nesach. So we find this Talmud is asking his Rebbe some question Yain Nesach, and the Gaon writes back to him, if you just be in front of me, we can understand, I can understand so much better where you're coming from, I can explain to you. Now you're far away, what am I supposed to do? You know what? I'll give you the general rules of thumb. So it was like a correspondence of a yeshiva, because they couldn't come there, because they live far away. But he still wanted to have a kesher with the Rebbe. They sent it by mail, and therefore they were able to answer. That's where the tshuvas are going in. And now that, number 4a, same thing.
Well, that's a big turning point also.
That what?
Because that now gives the power of the Talmud
to stay there.
To interpret, also to it, or to say, no, I was saying, to interpret the tshuva and to apply it to a case. And
correct. Right? And
it's no
correct.
Longer... Tell me what to do exactly.
Correct.
They have to think on their feet.
Correct. Stay there. They end up staying over there, understanding tshuvas. Now that, till today, we gain from those tshuvas of the Gaonim, tshuvas of Rishonim, tshuvas of Achronim. That's what we do. That's the whole concept of tshuvas was born like that. Again, like you said, if you come over there, it's told to you very clearly. Once it's not like that, did he mean like this? Did he mean like this? Maybe he meant like that. Yeah, but I might think he mean like this because it's something else. And that's itself generates more learning and more understanding and more scenarios and more cases, all because you're right, because you put it in writing and it's not always so clear, and then more questions come up, and hence there's more learning. It's like a self generating system because of these tshuvas. You hear what he's pointing out? It's very correct. Number 4a, same thing. Again, because you're such a close Talmud of us, so therefore, we are telling you what's on our mind. Again, the tshuvas originally were towards the Gaonim. Now, I found this very fascinating. What language were the tshuvas written?
What, I guess?
What do you think? So believe it or not, the tshuvas are written in three languages. Hebrew, Aramaic, and Arabic.
I'll say Arabic.
Fascinating. Tshuvas in Arabic? So they say that...
That's what Rambam wrote in the...
I know. But Mati, the Rambam is 500 years that the Jews are under Arab rule. Right? In time, in Gaulis, Arab rule. Here they're coming 200 years after the Gemara, after the Amoraim.
That's who's living there.
I understand. Write Tshuvas in Arabic? I thought it was... So the way the books are saying it is that originally the Tshuvas were written probably in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh. And the reason is, because who asked the tshuvas? The Talmidim. Talmidim, they asked the Shailas. There was the language of the Talmidei Chachamim was Lashon HaKodesh. Right. The language of the Talmidei Chachamim was Lashon HaKodesh. They spoke Hebrew. Right? Aramaic, the language of the Gemara. But the Pshutei Am, they didn't speak Lashon HaKodesh or Aramaic. They spoke Arabic. And based on what the tshuva was, the shaila was asked, based on that, they answered the shaila. So if the shaila was asked to the Gaon in Lashon HaKodesh, he would answer back in Lashon HaKodesh. If it was asked in Aramaic, he answered in Aramaic. And if it was asked in Arabic, or what we call today English, he would answer the tshuva in English.
There's no tshuva today written in English.
And that's what I'm saying. I told my father, I said, Abba, look, imagine somebody say, Rabbi.
Right.
It's unheard of, right? I know. But there, look at number 5b. You tell me how you understand this tshuva.
You can get the in English, you're still getting it
exactly,
in Hebrew.
Exactly. Now look, number 5b. Usheshaltim. Omer Rav Abba. Right, this is a serious shayla. Omer Rav Yechanan. Manali biyotcha. Amalai hein lemacho. Amalai hein. Yomi money says yes. Amalai tells him, Tenei give it to me. Amalai meshati nibach. I'm joking. Potter. Whole Gemara Baba Basa. Serious Gemara. Cheskas abatim. Cheshem mishmet. Difficult shayla. Right? It's not some crazy shayla. Not some simple shayla.
How do I make Havdalah? Do I look at my hands like this? Not a shayla like that. Not some, you know, H.com type of shayla. This is a serious Chayshu Mishma shayla on the Gemara. Now read further. You tell me what it says for Edomati. Could you read it? Ani Mshat Ani B'chol Potter. Now next word. Gir Va'agav In Talim In Yiskatze Ale V'yukal Lu Im Kulat En Lu Kabalti Fanka Va'kal Kulat Mazach O Maspaka Gaz Kulu Vankal. It's all Arabic. It's not Aramaic. This is all Arabic. The entire tshuva is written in Arabic. He ends up with the word V'yigav Amen. Amen. Answer with the word Amen. That yes. The whole tshuva is written in Arabic. Right? Throws in Mshat Ani B'ch. Third line. Vama blo shach ida kal mashat mashat ani boch palis Allah. I don't know what he's talking about. Shvus heses. I see a word I recognize, right? But basically, the entire tshuva is written in Arabic on difficult concepts, on chayish mishpat concepts. So maybe in the beginning it was written by the hamoinam, the pshuteam, but the end already, yeah, they're answering in Arabic. Like I'm asking a shayla, a rashiv in English, and he gives me a tshuva written in English.
In Europe, did they write the tshuvas in Yiddish?
I don't think
I
so.
I think they wrote it also in Hebrew.
Also in Hebrew, Lashon Kodesh. Now, by the way, tshuva number 5a, Aramaic, depending on the question. Shali Rabbanan disyum al gava dehaven etalt en achvo v'sham deshachiv sora achte. Somebody has two brothers, and he heard that one woman died, and he started shiva already, and then it turns out it was the other one, and the question is, do you start new shiva or not, because you said shiva for the wrong person? Okay, that's a question in Aramaic. Answered in Aramaic. That makes sense. Tshuva number 5. Question in Hebrew. Right? Shaila is in Hebrew. And it's actually about, you go home, you read it, about kaparas, Erev Yom Kippur, that you do kaparas, swing the chicken around your head. That's from Rav Shash Nagoyin. That's from the early Goyinim. The minute that we do kaparas is 1600 years old, 1500 years old, from the early Goyinim. All the way back to the time of Goyim, the minute you kaparas. Okay, he writes the whole tshuva, what the purpose is and what the concept, written in Hebrew. But you see the development. Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic. Like, who writes? Do you ever see Shilas the tshuva sefer written in Yiddish? Or in English?
Yiddish, no, definitely not.
In Yiddish, also not. Shilas the tshuva sefer? Yeah, maybe, you know, the Rebbe Gefurzog Doi, Mutter, also, maybe they'll tell you what happened. But Shilas and tshuva from the Goyim? Written in Aramaic, in Arabic?
Ram did.
But that's not so difficult to understand. Why? Because he wrote a book for the masses. He wrote a book for the masses. So he wrote, you know, what he write in Aramaic, not Mishnah Torah, he write in Arabic. Mordechai. Right, whatever. So like today, somebody writes, Aryeh Kaplan writes a book in English. That's for the masses. That's not so hard to understand. But Shailas and Tshuvas, Halachic discourse, a shayla, and I give you to write that in Arabic. I find it quite fascinating. Again, we see the Goyim, they adapted to the time that they were in. You know, the Goyim were so pivotal in establishing, taking this Gemara, which was learned by only the Amoraim and the scholars, and bringing it out to the Hamoinam, making it the learning for everybody, making the halacha with all everything that comes along with it, promulgated to the hamoinam, to everybody out there. And the Goyim were able to do that, right? Who they were, the power that they had, and people followed them, and they're able to relate to them. And you'll see the Goyim, they did a few revolutionary things. I mean, the Amram Goyim, the time of the Goyim, the first Siddur was written down. Siddur of Amram Goyim. The siddur we have comes from the Goyim. Doesn't mean people didn't daven until then. Of course it did. But to have an official siddur, right, written down, that we should daven the same way, Rambam Goyim. What's his name? Rav Tzemach Goyim, in the year 800, started with a dictionary. An Aramaic dictionary. So that people should understand. Because people speak Arabic. They didn't speak Aramaic anymore. Right? In the time of the Gemara, they all spoke Aramaic. So Aramaic was... Now, you cannot really say that Aramaic is like the English, because Aramaic has Kedusha. Aramaic Unkelus was translated to Aramaic. Jews always spoke Aramaic from the time of Matan Torah. We always spoke Aramaic. So Aramaic is not really the English, right? No. But Arabic is. So Aramaic, the Gemara was written in Aramaic,
which is a semi-Jewish language, right? It wasn't, not like Yiddish, Aramaic has Kedusha, right? In time, they always spoke Aramaic, so that was, the Gemara was written that everybody understood Aramaic. But in the time of the Goyim, 200 years later, 300 years later, in time of the Arab conquest, they spoke Arabic. So they didn't understand the Gemara. So if Tzemach writes a Milan, might say dictionary, Gemara, to what's the name? To Arabic, to understand what the words mean. The Sefer HaAruch, which is also translating words, etymology of words. That was all started by the Goyim. So much we have today, and the fact that it's so spread out, and the fact that it's so adaptable, and it's so accessible to everybody, was the work of the Goyim. And it started with their tshuvas. Started with the tshuvas. This is one fact. They did so much tshuvas and the dictionary. There was a sefer called Baal Hilchas Gedolos. Tosfos quotes him. It was written by one of the Goyim in the year 750. Halachas. Like a halacha sefer.
That's according to Shemur.
Right? Shemur quotes him. Halacha sefer. Not a Gemara. Halacha sefer. Meaning, this you have to do over here. On this day you got to do this. Organize it based on Gemaras. Right? But in a, based on time of the year. You know, organize it. Again, to make it for everybody. Make it for the masses. So the Goyim really did a tremendous part in taking this Talmud of the Amoraim and the Mishnah and the Talmud of the Amoraim and bringing it to the people, making it accessible to them in all the right languages and all the without it. And they did it with everything. That's how we understand Takonas HaGoyim in a better light. We understand, you know, the Tshuvas in a better way. We can understand the dictionary. That was what the Goyim did, and they were successful. Because again, they had the power. They had the power of the Rishuyos, they were in control, and they were able to bring the Talmud, the book of the Masifta, of the yeshivas, and bring it to the people, and make it part of their way of life. Fascinating. Not just an introduction, what the Goyim did. I'd like to really focus on each thing individually. We did a little bit of Tshuvas. I'd like to focus on the Sefer Baal HaChodechus Gedolos, very important, on the, by the way, the first one to write a philosophical book on philosophy was of Rav Goyim, Emunah V'Deyos, right? Emunah V'Deyos, philosophy on belief in God, right? They wrote a book on that, the Goyim. It's a cult from Gemaras, obviously. It was known from Chazal, from Midrashim, but he put it all in one book on Jewish philosophy, Emunah V'Deyos, Rav Goyim. Another thing that the Goyim did, they did so much in order to bring Yiddishkeit alive to everybody, and that's what the Goyim, pivotal in our transmission of the Torah. Okay.